Welcome back for part two with Jessica Baker as we talk more about what set deck coordinators do in a day and what they're responsible for and what are some crazy things that they have to deal with and what are some of their tasks that you had no idea that they were doing while they were doing the 700 other things that you asked them to do. They are such magnificent little unicorns, and Jessica Baker is back with us today to talk a little bit more about it. And a teeny tiny reminder, I super love her. She's the best. She is amazing and the shit all at once. So if you know her, give her some love and tell her how awesome she is, because she deserves to hear it every day. And a teeny tiny baby itty bitty reminder, she's worked on the movie Dumplin', Stranger Things, and Like a Boss, which is where I met her. And ever since then, I've been in awe of all of her professionalism and kickassery that she does in the office. It's impressive and insane. Yep. To sort of change lanes really quick, what's your favorite part of your job? What's the most rewarding thing for you?
I like connecting people in meaningful ways that, and helping us all get to a shared dimension in the way that we think about something. That's a roundabout way of saying, like, I really like bringing people together and solving issues.
I love that.
And Set Deck is a great place for that. You know, I've had the privilege of working for props. I've worked for construction. You know, I have obviously a thing for this industry, or I would leave it.
Right.
You know, but I have worked a lot for Set Deck, and I just found your home. You know, connecting people and getting things done and removing roadblocks. I love that.
That's awesome. Yeah. We're glad to have you. How did you get your start in the industry? I forgot to ask you at the top of the episode.
You know, I lived abroad, and I was in a big transition in my life and moved back to the States, and I really needed a big change. I thought I wanted to go to law school.
Wow.
That was kind of the best idea for me. So I just started imagining what creative endeavors I might change gears to, and sort of found my way into the industry from that. I ended up doing something not necessarily very creative in the industry. You know, I do logistics and I run people's budgets and deal with legal clearances, but the people thing is where I think I used my most creative tendencies.
Absolutely. It shows. It showed with me. I saw it for sure. It's wonderful that you found your calling. You're like, well, it happened. What do you feel is the most valuable lesson that you have learned from your years of experience?
I think it's easy to get mired down in being negative about something, right? Especially when we work the long hours that we work. And I mean, you know, we're talking about this within our union right now, Sheena, you know, the hours of 12s turn into 14s, and for shooting crew that turns into 16s. And, you know, it can be, I think, tough to maintain a level of positivity. And if you're working for a tough show or a tough department, it can be really hard. But one of the joys and also tough things about this industry is that nothing lasts forever.
That's so true.
It all comes to an end.
It does.
You know, and so I tell my PAs this. I'll say to them, you're not always going to get on a job that you love, but it doesn't mean you can't finish the job. it will come to an end probably in 5 months. There's going to be good shows. There's going to be bad shows. They'll all come to an end. Hopefully you have more good shows than bad shows.
Hopefully.
And more good days than bad days. You know, I think I also have learned that there is a power to taking time. You know, if you have, again, the privilege of being able to take some time off, it really helps to go into the next one in a much more positive way, I think.
Yeah, it's huge. I did a whole episode about burnout, and I think breaks are something that no one really tells you about and no one really warns you that you should do. Because when you first start out, you are so hungry for work that you're just working yourself constantly. And after 3 years, you just watch 3 years go by so fast, and there was no break in there, and yeah, there was no quiet peace of mind time that you can just catch up for a second and kind of gather yourself. But
yeah,
I feel like the pandemic restarted a lot of people's buttons. So it was good. It was like a reset that everyone needed and they didn't know they needed.
Yeah.
What is your relationship with the decorator normally like? I know you kind of touched upon you're there to support them and you work very closely with them.
Depends really on the decorator. I will follow the tone that they set and figure out where I can best be utilized. Yeah. I mean, I usually have a very supportive relationship and they usually end up using me for maybe more things than they even suspected, but it usually, I let them set the tone of what that looks like. No, I always ask at the beginning of the show, what are the most important things to you for your coordinator to do?
That's a really good habit to have.
Top priority, you know?
That's a big deal. I feel like that's a big deal. Because you realize that someone who asks you that at the top of a show is really your ally. You know that you have an ally in that person.
Yeah.
Is your position considered a union position?
Trixie.
I know.
It is. I'm a member of a union, and people want you to be a union member in order for them to hire you on a show. Although it is possible to be hired on as a non-union member, the Right to Work state in Georgia. I'd like to point that out. I am a union member, but the actual position is not actually called out and recognized by my particular union.
Right.
So it can be, it's odd. Sometimes I'll get called into the production office and they'll say, we can't list you as a set deck coordinator. You're just going to be another art coordinator. And I mean, whatever, you know, I think it needs to be recognized, of course.
Yeah.
And I know that there is a group of coordinators and buyers working on that intimately. Yes, it is. I mean, I have never had in the early period, everyone's like, of course you're a union member, right? Nobody wants to hire a non-union person, but this position actually doesn't exist as a job description, if you will, for the outside world within the union. So that's another thing. It's like, there's something to words. There's something to identifying something. It gives power to it and weight to something. And it's like, you gotta recognize this as a job before anyone takes it seriously.
Absolutely. I believe it's 44, the LA union. Buyers aren't recognized in the union as well. They're just considered part of property, and property is a classification, but technically the position is not recognized fully the way other positions are. And I know that they in LA, the buyers in LA are also working on that. And I know there's so much frustration from coordinators, and I completely understand and empathize and fully support recognizing that position, because it is one of the most important positions that we have in our department. It's impossible to do a certain budget job and above without a coordinator. It's not possible. Yeah. You can't get it done. You can't get everyone's wish list done if you don't have a coordinator, which makes them essential.
Yeah. And I think more and more people are starting to get on board with that. It's just slow going.
Yeah. As I think most things are when it comes to union stuff, it's sort of a delayed process. Mm-hmm. So this question is kind of tricky, and feel free to answer however you'd like. It's just something that I like to talk about with people who are going into the coordinator position. And there are a lot of times where this happens, where a coordinator is not getting the rate that they're asking for. And in that situation, if your rate has not been met in the past, has there been ways to help you compensate for your time so you can take that job but still be compensated? Like, maybe you work out a deal with a decorator where you work from home one day a week, or XYZ.
Yeah, this is a tricky question.
I know.
I think that even if you work something out, it rarely changes the way that you really do the job.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know?
Right.
So I think when you take a rate hit, you just have to recognize it as a rate hit. I'm in a position now where if I take a rate cut, I do it for a strategic reason, because I really want to work with that person. And the biggest issue with taking a rate cut, if it's not a financial issue for you, the biggest issue is that the next person who hires you, the next UPM who hires you, will use it against you.
Absolutely.
When you try to get back to the rate that you were using. So I think it's really tough to take a rate cut and then get back to where you were or where you feel that you wanted to be. And I don't think that this is, I know that this is not only a coordinator problem.
Oh yeah, across
the
board.
Anybody problem, mm-hmm. who gets hired, who does something for a department head that they love, or like a whatever, like one of the top three keys. Like if you're working for the production designer directly and you take a rate cut to be with them, mm-hmm. you know, it's tough because inevitably it gets used as to why the next group of people don't need to pay you your usual rate.
Exactly.
Because, well, you work for less time.
Yep.
So this is not a coordinator issue, although we face it because for a variety of reasons, which I don't need to go further into here, but it's a problem whenever you decide you're willing to do that. You got to understand, and I think most people do, you're going to have to figure out a way to talk yourself back into your rate.
Your normal rate. I had that conversation with lead man recently, and it's hard because exactly that. The UPM only sees what you have just come off of. And I've had certain UPMs exchange credits for a lesser rate. So, you know, maybe you get a certain credit in exchange for the lower rate. Mm-hmm. Sometimes UPMs will bargain, oh, well, it's 10-hour days and you're going to have an easier schedule. And that has never been the case, not a single time. So I take the lower rate thinking, okay, it's going to be an easier job, and not a single time has it ever worked out. And I'm not saying that it doesn't ever work out. I'm just saying in my personal experience, that has never happened. I've never seen that in fruition. It just hasn't happened for me. But, you know, maybe one day it will. I can't take that risk anymore. For me, it's not worth it.
Yeah, and I feel like it just doesn't work both ways. So sometimes, and not every UPM, I don't want to indicate that.
But yeah.
Sometimes UPMs will be like, well, what did you make on your last show? And if it's higher, it's really high, mm-hmm. then they're like, oh, well, I could never afford to pay you that.
Yep.
Why are you asking me my rate then? What my rate was on the last show?
Mm-hmm. Which technically, by the way,
you want it to be lower.
Yeah.
So that you can say, that's what I can pay you too.
Yes. And technically, yeah, that's illegal. They passed that law.
Yes.
So technically,
yeah, thank you,
illegal. Just so everyone knows. What has been the worst experience, just to casually segue into this one, what has been the worst experience with a set deck department that you've had?
I don't know if I've had a worst experience. I can always find something redeeming. I mean, even in really tough times,
mm-hmm,
I try to bring as much calm as I can, empathy.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you that I think the hardest thing is when the people who are working in the department are totally at odds.
Yeah.
It's tough when your department is at odds with someone else. I'm always trying to fix those situations.
Right.
But if a lead is ultimately at odds with the decorator,
that's a hard one.
At odds, I don't mean like just the occasional mean
they hate each other.
Odd.
Yeah.
That's usually a very tough situation.
Yeah. Animosity is never easy.
You spend a lot of time just doing the go-between, and you do what you can, but in the end, it's tough for the whole department. And it's hard on both of those people,
mm-hmm,
as well. No one is happy and everyone is suffering.
Absolutely.
That's tough.
Yeah. And I've talked to a couple people about that happening on some of their jobs on the first season, and it bleeds into your work. You're less productive. Everyone has sort of a cloud, and it just makes the job harder. It could be the easiest job in the world, but if you have that dynamic, it is rough.
Yeah. And ultimately, because you're divided within the department, it leaves you open to so many things from outside.
It sure does.
You know, so, yeah.
This one might be an easier question. What has been your best experience? Could be a favorite crew.
Again, like, I love all the crews. I mean, I know that sounds so, it sounds so dumb, but I really do. And I've worked with some crews that have been viewed as not great crews. You know, I've worked with crews that have been viewed as the A-level crew, you know, but usually the people are just genuinely people, you know, lovely people. The circumstances are bad.
Yeah. That's the Baker magic talking.
They're like all of my shows. Looking back over the years, I just would have something positive to say about all of them. Even if they were a hard experience, I would have something positive to say.
Well, that's awesome. I love that. That's amazing that you have that perspective. What are some of the most helpful things that your set deck coworkers can do for a coordinator?
Label your paperwork. Just label it.
One more time for the people in the back. Label your fucking paperwork.
You know, and honestly, accounting departments have gotten very specific now about wanting to know, like, what you want and why. So if you're bringing me, for example, a Home Depot receipt that has a bunch of numbers and gibberish next to it because it's not completely, just take 2 seconds and tell me what that is so that I'm not tracking you down, wasting your time, you know, just right on there. And if you bought something odd, just say for such and such, because inevitably, I'm going to get asked.
Yep.
I'm going to get asked on the front end. Like, I'm going to submit it and they're going to be like, thank you for the details. or they're going to kick it back and we're going to have to say it later.
That makes sense. I love that.
The other thing is, I will say this, and I am not as sensitive about this as some other coordinators, and to my detriment, I will happily tell you that, is that most coordinators do not want you telling a PA what to do without clearing it with the coordinator, because maybe there's something else that needs to take precedence. I need to help them plan their day. PAs are like deer in headlights when there's like three things given to them. It's like, well, I already have a thing. I don't know what this means, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, I will help you sort it out, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not as territorial about the PAs. I don't feel slighted, but it won't be efficient.
Yes, absolutely.
So, you know, I know a lot of coordinators who are like, don't look sideways at my PA without telling me you're going to look sideways at them. And I don't mean that in an evil, they're not evil. That's their way of keeping a lot of boundaries.
Yes.
And a lot of control.
Absolutely. And bad experiences.
To my detriment, I tend just to be a little loosey or goosier with that.
I get that.
But when too many people are inputting in stuff into the PA brain without me knowing, then other stuff that has been pushed to the side, then it creeps up on us later and blah, blah, blah.
Totally makes sense. I know a lot of coordinators that have just had something happen where someone went directly to the PA and then the PA didn't realize, oh, I went to do this pickup at Sam Flax or an art store or whatever, and now I'm late. I'm 2 hours late for lunch pickups. So lunch orders aren't in.
Which everyone knows.
Whew.
No one likes a late lunch.
Oh, man. If you want to piss off an entire department of people, you just bring your lunch late. That's all you have to do. If you do it consecutively for a week, you have enemies for life. It is impressive how quick.
The eating.
It's essential.
Yeah.
What would be the one thing that you would change about the film industry if you could?
Leadership training for department heads.
Oh, I love that. That's beautiful.
I have spoken about this for years. We prize creativity over leadership in our industry, which makes sense. Okay. We're looking for those people who have an eye for beauty, an eye for looks good in camera, an eye for design, an eye for decorating, an eye for architecture. And a lot of times what happens is people develop this through time over the industry, right? So a lot of trial and error. And leadership and management and communication are something that can be helped actually through some training and through some guidance. And I feel like, is that the next frontier? Could we get better by actually giving our department heads some tools?
I love that. I think it's genius.
Manage a department.
Yeah. Because everyone has their different work styles. And, you know, we all have to readjust every 3 to 6 to 9 months. With a new team, a lot of the time, sometimes you can't travel with your normal team. And so your work style is going to be new for a different group. And I worked with a crew that had a very different work style than I did. And
I was just thinking of you, Shayna, as you were saying this, I'm like, oh.
It's so different. And each person responds to a certain way. And if a lead man tells me, as a decorator, that I can't talk to the set dressers and I can't give them information, to me, that's not an option. Like, I have to be able to communicate with people in my department. That seems crazy. If you want me to run it by you first, I understand. And if you want the communication to come from you and the list to come from you, that's fine. Just, you know, do me the courtesy of also checking in with me about the list that we have. Because if it's not getting done, who does it at the end of the night? It's going to be me. It'll be me. Because at the end of the night, I want it done. And so there's just a lot of little things that work styles are so important. And so much changes so quickly in our industry. So that's a really, that's a genius idea. I wish we would do that.
I don't know. I just, we've all been there where maybe not even the department head, but the head of the, you know,
whatever. Yeah.
Just not that great at organizing their team and managing their team. And it's like,
absolutely.
There's some things that could be
addressed.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, we're down to our last question. And okay. It's for anyone that is listening that's new to the industry, has done a career change, is thinking about switching to the industry, or, you know, just someone that you want to give a shout out to. But it's any tips, tricks, or tributes that you would like to give.
So I always tell my students who are just dipping their toes into this industry, if you do not want to work hard, and by hard, I mean long hours and hard, this isn't for you, boo. It's not for you. You know, it's a lifestyle. It's a certain lifestyle that you have to embrace and you have to figure out how to make work for you. And some people, I think, so many of us in the industry, Shayna, you and I used to say, oh, our job is so glamorous. You know,
absolutely.
This industry, it's just full of glamour. The behind the scenes is just a lot of hard work by people who are really dedicated to bringing you stories. And a lot of people want to be a part of that, but it isn't for everybody. It really isn't. So if you want to get into this industry, test it out, but allow yourself space to say, this was way more than I thought it was going to be. This was way more than I can manage in my life. Whatever. It's just not for everybody.
Yeah.
And then I would say the shout outs are to all the PAs
Aww.
Who come into this industry. I call them the Sherpas of the film industry. They are the backs that we all ride on. And it's a tough position. You have many bosses as a PA. And you will be expected to work long hours a lot of times. I'm always babying my PAs, and I feel like I really do them a disservice. I actually had a PA recently reach back out to me and say, Baker, which is what everyone calls me in the industry, you really did baby us. I'm learning what it really means to be a PA now. And I do them a disservice in a lot of ways, you know, but because I view them as precious resource that is often treated like dung, mm-hmm. you know, I try to be as kind and gentle on them as I can. But I feel that in some ways I have failed to prepare them for the realities of the next PA job, you know. But the shout out is really to the PAs.
That's very sweet.
Who keep us going, who keep us sane, who make us laugh, who, when I tell them to do three things in short succession and then I like storm out, they'll come back and still smile, you know, that work in all kinds of situations, strange COVID situations. And, you know, I appreciate them. And I have had great PAs, many great PAs, and a lot of them have gone on to do other things in the industry. Some of them in different departments, some of them in the same department, and I'm always happy to see them working.
Oh, that was so beautiful. No one ever does the shout outs, and that was really sweet. I love that you gave it to the PAs. That was amazing. I love that.
They make my job possible.
Yeah, and they bring sanity to us for so many reasons.
Even if it's only in a hot soup at lunch.
Yeah. Literally, it could just be lunch and it could just be like, hey, I left my key in the car and then locked it. So could you run me a spare key for my car?
Or can you stand here until AAA arrives? Because I've got a meeting. Whatever it is.
Yeah. Right? Any of it.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That was awesome. Well, Baker, you are a goddess, a coordinator goddess that has been sent to Earth, and we are not worthy. We do not deserve you. I love you so much. You're so amazing. Thank you for coming and doing this.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate that you're doing this podcast, and thank you for being so kind. And I, of course, think incredibly fondly on the time we had together and hope it returns in the future.
Oh, you're making me blush. Well, I really appreciate you. Thanks for coming on. And that was Jessica Baker talking a little bit about our set deck coordinating responsibilities. So much goes into it. So much is unseen. You basically have an iceberg when you're working with a set deck coordinator. You see the surface of it, and 100 million thousand things are under that surface that you see that they have going on. So I just want to keep giving all of our coordinators as much support and as much applause as they deserve, because it's unending. They are a very hardworking position. And just a little reminder, Jessica Baker actually teaches a coordinating and accounting class that you can get through your university programs. And if you're interested, just reach out at either our Gmail email address, which is gophersetdeckpodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to inquire. I'll send you over a link and get you into that program or signed up for it. And then we also have an Instagram account. If you're not following us, we love friends. So why don't you follow us? Go for Set Deck Podcasts on Instagram. And lastly, reach out to Jessica and just tell her how great she is, because she's great. She's really great. And thank you so very much for listening. We appreciate you and all that you're doing for us with your listens and your shares and just hanging out. Hope this has been informative, and be an exceptional human today, tomorrow, 100 hours from now, 1,000 hours from now, 1 billion hours from now. Thanks. Goodbye.